reading today comes from Ecclesiastes 3, 1 to 8. There is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to uproot, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to scatter stones and a time to gather them, a time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing, a time to search and a time to give up, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. This is the word of the Lord.
I want to read to you a quote, a well-known quote, or highly used quote from a medical specialist in the US. Her name was Dr. Susan Coven. And she wrote in the Boston Globe, and she says this: "In the past few years, I have observed an epidemic of sorts, patient after patient suffering from the same condition. The symptoms of this condition include fatigue, irritability, insomnia, anxiety, headaches, heartburn, bowel disturbances, back pain, and weight gain." And she goes on to say, "There are no blood tests or x-rays that can diagnose this condition. And yet," she says, "it's easy to recognize. The condition is excessive busyness." So here's a serious question to you this morning. Do you think, as a society, we are addicted to our busyness? I'm starting to suspect that we are, and that there's something in us that's like a moth to a flame that draws us to this same place. How many times do we talk to someone, or we hear ourselves say, when we answer the question, "How are you?" "I'm flat out. I'm just so busy. I wish it would slow down. Where's all the time gone? I can't believe it's almost August." Do you hear yourself saying those sorts of things? If we think about it and we think about ourselves, many of us would be hard-pressed to deny that doctor's diagnosis on us. Is it true that we are addicted to busyness? And if so, what are we medicating for? I think that we find ourselves caught up in the business whirlwind, and in fact, we almost wear it like a badge of honor. So someone says to you, "I am so busy." And click, in goes the busyness response. And they're saying, "I work 50 hours a week." And you're like, "Well, that's nothing, because I work 60 hours this week." It's almost as if we want to outcompete each other with our busyness. Even those who are retired, and let me tell you, 9 o'clock, I've got a dry laugh here through this, because you talk to someone who's retired and they say, "I'm busier now than when I was working." And I said to them this morning, "Yeah, but you get to choose what you do, don't you?" I find myself caught up in this, and I'm beginning to wonder, who started this race? Who started this busyness chaos engine? This, "I can run on 6 hours sleep a night, I can go at a frantic and long pace for ages competition." Who started all this stuff? Do you think that's what we were made to be? So today, in the second part of our Real series, I want to focus our attention, and if you haven't looked at your watch, we're actually running behind time this morning, so it's a real irony here. I want to focus our attention on time management. Okay, but it was a great story, wasn't it? It was good worship this morning, so here we go. Now, my family and my staff and those who know me really well will be laughing at me speaking on busyness. I'm not the best at a non-busy lifestyle, so if you're feeling uncomfortable with me raising this with you this morning, I'm feeling uncomfortable presenting it to you this morning, especially the last part of what I'm going to say, so we'll wait for that. I hope that today we can get a sense of rhythm in our life. I've got 3 points. Here we go. First one. Let's see the picture that the Bible paints of time, because the Bible is very clear about time. Now, it speaks directly and many times over about time. Let me give you a few verses. Colossians 4, verse 5. Be wise in the way you act towards outsiders, making the most of every opportunity. Now, some translations retranslate that last passage, that last verse, making the best use of your time. Ephesians 5 says this, be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity. Colossians 3, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as if working for the Lord, not for human masters. Mark 1, verse 35, very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Jesus got up, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Now, these are just a few verses that point us towards a similar line, and the line is this, that we are to use wisdom and discernment in how we use our time. And these verses also give us a sense of self-discipline and a deliberate choice how we use our time. Now, it's not something that we do or think about very often. And immediately this challenges us and it challenges me. For while we live in a society that is now described as time poor, I am not sure all the things that we fit into our life are in fact prudent. The Bible makes it really clear that we have to answer for our actions. Now, I don't think that this means necessarily that every single moment of your life you need to be anxious about. Rather, it draws us into a bigger picture to see what we are doing with the gifts that have been entrusted to us. I've often thought about the parable of the talents. Jesus tells the story of the three workers with a boss who entrusts them with different amounts while he was away. In Matthew's version, the parable, we have the three amounts being 5, 2, and 1. In some time later, when the boss comes back, they are all asked to give an account for the amounts that they have been entrusted with. The first two have doubled the amount, and the last one has done nothing. Now, for me, the parable is more about using what you have got rather than increasing the size of that which you have. It seems to me the last worker got in trouble, not for bad investment choices, but his lack of effort in trying to do something with what he was entrusted with, if you get what I'm saying. I think God expects us to use the time that we have been given. Last week, I've used the phrase that we are in danger of being automated, and it stuck with me because I think that some of our life is in danger of this happening. We do the same things over and over again, and we don't think or we don't try to engage in maybe the new thing that God is wanting to do in our lives. So we get up, we go to work or we go to uni, we go home, we watch TV, we go to sleep. We get up, we go to work, or you know exactly what I'm talking about. Is that your life as well? I read the other day someone who said, you don't go to work for 8 hours for a company, then get home and not work on your own goals. You're not tired, you're uninspired. Of course, the classic text of time is the reading you heard read out today from Leah from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. There is a time for everything. And it's true, isn't it? There is time for all things. Some of us who work too much need to hear there is a time for rest. And some of us who work too little need to hear that there is a time to work. The bottom line of this beautiful piece of poetry is, of course, rhythm. And I touched on that a little bit last week. And I think the area of time and time management we have lost, in the area of time and time management, what we have lost is a sense of rhythm. And what's more, we've lost the sense of a Sabbath, that is a designated day off. We've forgotten what it is to work hard and to rest hard. And now I know many of us here, amongst us here, will go for months without a proper day off. We feel like somehow we're unable to take the time. And so maybe the solution to our work addiction and our guilt when we're not working is to begin to bring rhythm into our life. And we allow new things to be a part of who we are. You know, there's a time for work and there's a time for rest. There's a time to run the kids around and there's a time to stay home. There's a time to get up and get going early and there's a time to sleep in. There's a time to sit up and have dinner at the table and there's a time to have a barbecue in the backyard with friends and watch the sun go down. There's a time to put your work shoes on and go to work and there's a time to feel the sand, the grass between your toes while you're on holidays. There's a time to say yes and there's a time to say no. I wonder what it'd be like if you were to write down your own version of there is a time. My second point. I want to help us with rhythm. And we know that we only have limited time, and when we know that we have that, we build a rhythm into our life, for we need to figure out quickly what is important, what are the important bits that have to be part of our life. I think some of our problem is that we are caught up in too many things that are too small, things that are not ultimately important in the grander scheme of things. Now, certainly, let me point the finger at social media. Social media has a lot to answer for here. Many of us have to be seen to be doing and undertaking and achieving more and more things. The irony of that is that we do it for these people who don't actually really care who we are and don't actually know us. But the thing is, the thing about social media is not some robber that breaks into your house and steals your time when you're not looking. So let me give you the light bulb moment. Social media has an off button. I know it's brilliant, isn't it? Let me give you an exclamation. Beta, can I have that table? Thanks. Some of you might have seen this before, and some of you might have heard this illustration used before, but it's worth repeating at this moment. Thanks, Bailey. There was a professor who came before his class one day and said, use this as an illustration, he said, sometimes there are things you need to fit in your life. And so he brought out a whole pile of rocks. Now, I didn't think about this too much when I used rocks for glass jars, so let's hope I don't break Sarah's really good glass jar here, and then the illustration will be fully ruined. So what he did was he put a whole pile of rocks in the glass jar, and he had a few more rocks than I had, because I pulled some out of the garden this morning that don't actually fit in the glass jar. And he said to the class, he said, is the glass jar full? And, of course, there's rocks jutting out of it, like this. And they all said, yes, Professor, the glass jar is full. And so, being a smart professor, he pulled out another jar in which he had smaller rocks. Now, I'm not going to pour this in there because I've still got another service tonight to do this with. I don't want to separate them all apart, but you get what I'm saying. And he poured that in there and shook it around. And, of course, that jar fitted into that jar. And he said to the class, class, is the jar full? And they all said, yes, Professor, the jar is full. So he pulled out a jar of sand. And he tipped that in there as well. And then he said to the class, class, is the jar full? And some of them got really smart and said, maybe. And so he got his drink bottle and he poured the water in there. And then he said to the class, class, is it full? And they said, yes, Professor, it's full. And then he said, what's the point of this illustration? And they said to him, the point is, of course, that if you really want to, you can pack more things into your life. And he said, no. He said, make sure you get the big things in first. That's the point, isn't it? Make sure you get the big things in first. What are the big things in your life that you need to get in first? Now, we all do extracurricular things. But the issue is, if we do extracurricular things at the expense of the core subjects we're doing, we'd be in trouble. Now, if we do it in uni, you might fail uni. That's one thing. But if you do it in life, you don't want to fail life. Yesterday, I was part of a Congolese wedding for our sister church in the northern suburbs. Some of you know the Congolese family that we helped immigrate to Australia and become Australian citizens. And I wish you could have all been there to see it. It was unbelievably outstanding. I don't have enough words to describe the colour and the noise and the beauty of it. The singing, the multiple choirs at this wedding, the fiery preaching, and Pastor Dennis preached, and he preached to the bride and groom, and I don't mean preach like I preach, I mean at the top of his lungs, amplified preaching. And he preached to the groom for 5 or 8 minutes and told him what his responsibilities were as a husband. And then he preached to the bride and told her for a couple of minutes what her responsibilities were as a bride, as a wife. And then he must have thought, I haven't said enough to the groom. So he came back to the groom and gave him another go. Look out the next wedding that I take. I've got the whole new line to... the prayers... All that, you wouldn't believe it, all that packed into just a measly 3.5 hours of a service. Wonderful stuff. But, and here's the thing that I wish I had this on video, because the bride was dressed beautifully in white, big heavy veil over her face the whole time, and right out the front. And so you can imagine me out the front, and the bride and groom, 6 attendants each side, a whole pile of old people, I don't know what they were doing, but they were there as well. And so it's, if you're in Africa, you're in Africa, right? You know, it's all happening. And I pronounced them husband and wife, and I sort of whispered, you can kiss the bride, because I wasn't sure what the protocol is in a Congolese sort of a setting. Boy, was I wrong. So the groom started to take off the veil off the bride, and all his best men got down on their knees and started to applaud and to say, please go, please do this, please do this. And then he started to give them all high fives. And so he's halfway doing this, and then they're calling him back, and he's giving them more high fives and giving them knuckle punches and the whole deal. And then he slowly takes it off. And I'm thinking, oh, just get on with it. Come on, what are you doing? I've got a birthday party to go to this afternoon. Like... I'm thinking, I need to go to the toilet at some stage here this day. And he's taking it off, and he's taking it off, and he's taking it off. And then, if that wasn't the highlight, no, it was the kiss. It was this just coming forward and like teasing with her a little bit, and then coming back, and then... And I'm all this time, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, fair crack of the whip, come on. And then I had a light bulb moment, and I thought, this is the first kiss. I have just pronounced these two husband and wife. This is their first kiss as married couple. Why do we rush it? What's the rush? Where are we going? What, do we need to go and get more photos, or do we need to put it up on social media? What's the story? Why shouldn't they take their time and do this? And it was beautiful because they did. They took their time and they loved each other and their families. And I reckon that's what was happening. There was mum and dad and all the uncles and aunties around me as well. The families were coming together beautifully. Why don't we take our time? What's the rush for us? We miss these significant, salient moments, don't we? We rush through time so much quickly. Point three, and I'm running over time. Point three, let's discover some new time management skills. I've got 4 different things, A, B, C, and D. Part A is this. Think about the big rocks that I've just explained. Think about your life. Mull over the question, do you know what those big rocks are? Do you know what the big rocks are that you need to put in your life? Or is the sand getting in the way of the rocks? Three, part B, here it is. A while ago, I wanted to drop a little bit of weight, and so I started to work on it, but nothing seemed to be happening. Have you ever done that? I joined Weight Watchers, I'm watching it, but nothing's happening, you know. And I realized that my half-hearted attempts and good intentions were not good enough. So I harnessed the help of an app, and I recorded absolutely everything that went into my mouth. And I was fairly surprised, not really, to find that my half-hearted attempts were constantly taking me way over that which I should have been taking for someone my size. And what I was trying to achieve, I was sabotaging. I needed to get real about what I was actually doing, and more to the point, I needed to get real about what I needed to stop doing, which was pretty simple. It's actually very simple maths, and the principles of it apply to so much more. If we want to manage our time, we want to be clear where it's going. And maybe it's time we need to do an audit or a time budget of our time. Third thing, part C. For me, last year, I went to, and I'm a person who likes to be fluid and move around and do all sorts of different things, I went to a fixed calendar in my work life. And this is, funny enough, rolled over into my personal life. A fixed calendar means that I portion certain times for certain things. So here, when I'm here in the office, I have time allowances for things like sermon writing, emails, and so I actually shut off my emails when I haven't got the time allowance for them. Appointments, planning, report writing, staff meetings, and all those sorts of things. You get the point. A fixed calendar is just a tool to help you put in the big rocks in your life. Maybe we should all think about something like this. My fourth point, I'm about to finish. And this is the one that I really struggle with. Maybe you do too. We have to discover and relearn to live into a Sabbath. That is a day off. Now, I know that I've mentioned this earlier, but I think for us in the Western world, this is our biggest challenge we face when it comes to time management at this present time. We do not know how to turn the machine off, and it just runs constantly. When I was a kid, we had friends and their family were not allowed to watch TV on a Sunday because they meant it to be a rest day, and they meant it to be different than six other days of the week. Could you imagine that? I don't know what it means for you, but I do know the intent of the Sabbath, and it's this. It was for you to rest and re-engage with God. Maybe this should be the biggest rock of all that we put in first. I read this quote this week, and I'll finish with this. From a psychologist called Robert Holden, who said, "The purpose of your life is not to be as busy as possible. Being busy can be purposeful and productive, but when you are permanently busy, it's a sure sign that your busyness conceals a lack of clarity, a fear of inadequacy, feelings of unworthiness, and a lack of faith in your soul's ability to help you live a life of purpose." So maybe that's the bottom line. We are unable to live with purpose. So jump off the hamster wheel, just for a moment. How about we all start taking steps to remove the busyness addiction that we've got going on? But here's the truth of the matter. You are loved and worthy even if you are resting. Let me say a prayer. Thank you, God, for creating in us so many different things. You created us to do a whole pile of stuff, but you also created us to be quiet and to rest. You created us for rhythm. Help us to see that more this day, and help us to live into it into tomorrow. In your name we pray. Amen.